moments from the cutting room floor. Lost excerpts from classic movies. Episode 1, Casablanca with Ingrid Bergman and Dooley Wilson.
Play it for me, Sam. Play As Time Goes By.
I don't remember how to play that one, Missy.
I'll hum it for you. Die, 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 die. Die, 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 die.
Sorry, I never heard that one, Missy. How about this one?
This is ABC Mono. And we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Jill McKay, Genevieve Moy, Peter Whitford, Drew Forsythe, and Peter Smalley. Meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch.
Yeah, where is my lunch?
Ready.
Well, if it's not ready, there's got to be trouble. Well, even if it is ready, I don't want it. What do you mean, equal opportunities? You get every opportunity.
Miss Harlow from the department, how do you do?
You must be the head of personnel, Mr. Posner?
Actually, I'm Frank Dawkins. I'm acting for Mr. Posner. He's filling in for the regional manager while he deputises for the assistant manager, Jack D'Souza. And between you and me, he's a bit of a no-hoper, but his dad used to be secretary of the Widgeon or the Young Liberal, so he got past barrier 8. Landed the job.
I don't think I have come all the way from Canberra to discuss Mr. D'Souza's political affiliations. Where is he working at the moment, precisely?
Jack? Oh, he's up on the 20th floor with the cut glass decanters and Lola Spagiesi taking shorthand on his knee.
Really, Mr. Dawkins? I wonder if you would curb this kind of sexist tittle-tattle. Whom is Mr. D'Souza replacing?
Well, he's standing in for Sam Cohen. He got fed up with being GM, got himself certified by the CMO, took his accumulated sick leave and disappeared to L.A.
I see. Well, now to the matter in hand. Equal opportunity employment.
Oh, yes, indeed. Now, Miss Harlow, I might say we're rather proud of our record in this area. Let me see. In the last 6 months, we have recruited 2 unmarried vicars into the catering department, 6 deaf-mute monolingual Eskimos into accounts, and a complete team of dissident Soviet lady wrestlers on the switch.
Well, I suppose that's a start. But these can hardly be construed as key positions. And only a tokenistic handful of ethnic and disadvantaged groups seem to be represented on your payroll.
Well, then, obviously, you're unaware of our long-standing commitment to the most disadvantaged group of all, from which we draw many of our senior officers.
I had no idea.
May I introduce Perkins, our head of research. Come here, Perkins. Perkins had an agrarian background, rather sad case. Miss Klein, our creative director here, she was trained in the circus. Now, this one's Schultz from the New York office. Right, lad, Schultz. We put him through Harvard Business School. DuPont, our chief security officer. And these are Rabinovitz from engineering. That one's Tagliatelle, chief of technical staff. Suzuki of accounts. Illicuddy, O'Toole over there. Parker, Cubbage, all good chaps.
Settle down there, Perkins. Miss Harlow's not from the canteen. You can pull her down. Was a big ape in the forest. He was so big and strong. He was the ruler of that kingdom. Call that monk King Kong. Yeah, King Kong. King Kong. King Kong. Woo, woo. When he found out what was happening, it wasn't much, much, much too late. Hey, hey, King Kong, King Kong, King Kong, woo, woo, King Kong.
Oh!
two-ton gorilla do in the jungle anywhere?
Anything an animal wants to, old chap.
I see. You heard about old Johnson?
Old Johnson, old Eaton boy.
Old Eaton boy, yes. Yes, he's gone and married a gorilla.
He's married a gorilla?
Yes.
Male or female?
Female. Nothing queer about Johnson.
Trapped the man of gorilla, brought it to the United States. Kong wrecked that city, and put it just was a poor Kong's day.
Kong, and that was Conway's Carnival. Mick and Jim Conway live via satellite from the top of the Empire State Building, New York City. Still number 93 for the 10th successive week. Great disc. And now for an interview with a visiting great musician from Europe.
Hello, this is Gillian Cross, and I'm talking to Gustav Mahler. Welcome, Gustav.
Yeah, thanks.
First of all, could you tell us how you got into the music business?
Well, it was an accident, really. I was a sheet metal worker, mm-hmm. and one day I got punched in the head. And the next thing I knew, I was a classical composer type of thing.
How did you come to compose your world-famous Das Lied von der Erde?
Oh, that. Yeah, it's a catchy little tune, isn't it?
Yes.
I was good mates with Arthur Toscanini, and we were over at his mum's place, you know, on the piss light, and it just come to me halfway through the Don Lane show.
It's been tremendously popular.
Yeah, it's gone gold in Brisbane.
And what are your immediate plans?
Well, I'm thinking of doing a few pub dates up and down the coast with Symphony No. 8 in E-flat major. We'll have Giuseppe Verdi on bass, and we hope to get a gig on Countdown.
We're going to hear something from that symphony now.
Yeah, this is the Adagietto, or as we call it in the trade, the noisy bit.
Channel 14, news update.
And the shock news tonight is that the Tasmanian Tiddlywinks Open at Digestion Lakes has been rained off for the third successive year. Ashen-faced Coolgardie coach Ralph Mendacious is claiming a moral victory, but Captain Wayne Thermos of the Townsville Toads insists the Sandgroper team has disqualified itself by using steroids. Meanwhile, in boring overseas news, the Soviet Politburo overthrown, Tsar Nicholas IV to be crowned jointly by the Patriarch of all the Russias and the Pope next week. New York engulfed by a 1,000-foot tidal wave, most of France and parts of Spain annihilated in a nuclear holocaust blunder. More details of the Tasmanian Tiddlywinks fiasco in our main bulletin.
Hello again and welcome. Our next guest today is a man who's in love with a fish. Hello, George.
Hello, Michael.
Well, it sounds quite remarkable, but you are, in fact, a fish lover, am I right?
Well, the correct term is piously asexual, but yes, I am sexually attracted to members of the fish family.
And how did this come about?
Well, I think I was always piously asexual. Of course, as a teenager, I used to feel the same normal attraction towards livestock as most other Australian boys my age. But as I grew older, I noticed my inclinations turning more and more towards fish. So that now I'm entirely piously asexual and living with a halibut called Roger.
And what do you and Roger do exactly?
Well, the same as most married couples, really. We go to the pictures quite a lot. We're both keen golfers, and I help Roger run his mail order business. Well, I run it, actually. Roger doesn't do much at all. After all, he's a fish.
Yeah, but, George, does his being a fish put much of a strain on the relationship?
Well, it affects our business partnership quite a bit, since he is the only one who can sign the checks.
But of your personal relationship?
It hasn't been easy, Michael. As I say, we're both keen golfers, but I'm the one who has to carry the clubs around. And on top of it all, I always beat him. So there is a little tension there.
Yes, I can go and see that. Tell me, how did you and Roger meet?
Quite simple, really. I put a classified ad in a newspaper.
An angling newspaper?
A Piscean sexual newspaper. Oh. In fact, the Finn Review. Roger answered it, and here we are.
And that's Roger with you, is it?
Yes, that's the little chappy. Say hello, Roger.
Yes. But he's very attractive, isn't he?
Yes, he's a fine-looking little fish.
What's that he's wearing?
A white wine sauce, a slice of lemon and a sprig of parsley.
Very interesting. Well, thank you, George and Roger. We'll be back in just a moment.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, came a story of the struggle between a handful of dedicated conservationists and a group of evil interstellar land developers. But that's another story. Meanwhile, episode 33 of Imperial Echoes. We find young Wimp Jaywalker stunned by the revelations of the wise old cosmic sage, Moby Baloney.
Okay, so Lord Greether's my father. I can dig it. What's the big deal?
I'm sorry, Wimp, but you should try to face facts. Your father has spent many years in the Imperial Public Service. He's more machine now than man.
Oh, come on, Moby. So he uses the memory banks at work to do his tax? Maybe he does take a few chips home from a stationary cupboard. You're not going to tell me there isn't some good in him.
I'm afraid it's more serious than that. A history of long lunches with the wrong people and a taste for garlic made your father a difficult man to approach.
But I'm his son!
That's as maybe. But what you don't know is that he's also the head of the Astral Society of Incompetent Skullduggery.
Azus? Oh, my God!
Can Wimp Jaywalker cope with the trauma of knowing the true nature of his father's lifestyle? Don't miss the next ball-shattering episode of Imperial Echoes.
Hello, this is Jean-Luc Vississoise with World Cinema. In our studio today is controversial filmmaker Federico Scalopini, whose latest film, Swedish Schoolgirls Get a Spanking, has been banned in this country because, in the words of the chief censor, it's rude, crude, and likely to offend anyone with more sensibility than a housebreak.
Oh, no, come on, fair shake. That's not one of my films at all. I've absolutely nothing to do with pornography. I want to make that perfectly clear from the start. I make neorealistic docudramas of an overtly political nature about the efforts of the proletariat through the ages to throw off their shackles of imperialist domination.
I'm so sorry, I stand corrected. So what, in fact, is your film called?
Sexy Socialist A-Go-Go.
It sounds fascinating.
Well, yeah, it's the moving story of three socialist schoolgirls who are tempted into imperialist ways by a black marketeer with a large trust fund, but are saved by their virile yet politically correct schoolteacher who subjects them to an intensive re-education campaign and his jacuzzi.
But forgive me, that sounds like your last film, Young Marxists in Heat.
Well, I suppose superficially it does, yeah, but Sexy Socialist A-Go-Go is really quite different.
In what way, precisely?
Well, the chicks are blonde, for a start.
But still, the plot basically revolves around a young man, three naked girls, and a hot tub.
Well, that's not so much the plot per se as the recurring thematic motif of my work, my underlying political statement, if you like.
Well, then, it seems to be the same statement you make in your 18 other films, including Young, Hot and Left Wing, I Love Lenin, and the anti-imperialist freedom fighters of the Upper Volta Get Into Leather.
Well, the You're Wrong, I Love Lenin is a straightforward cinematic biography about the great revolutionary leader.
But as told by an oversexed schoolgirl and her two sisters.
Well, I don't know about oversexed. You've got to remember that the Russian Revolution was also a time of great passion.
But surely the film is set in 16th century England.
Well, it is, yeah, but that's the allegorical nature of the work, so it can draw a parallel between Russia culture at the time of the Romanovs and the England of Henry VIII. Also, we had the costumes left over from Cardinal Wolsey and the lesbians.
And are you planning any other films at the moment?
Yeah, I'm working currently on a full-length dramatisation of the life of Gandhi.
But correct me if I'm wrong, that's already been done, hasn't it?
Mahatma, yes, but this is the story of Dolores Gandhi, the leader of the first Marxist or lady tag wrestling team. And, Jean-Luc, just wait till you see those costumes.
Federico Scalopini, thank you so much. Next week on World Cinema, I'll be talking to Boom Boom Russia, the star of that movie, from Jean-Luc Vichyssoise. Au revoir.
Excuse me. Has Sexy Schoolgirls Get Us Banking started yet?
Another 10 minutes.
One, thank you. Do you have spy concessions?
I'll need identification.
The bear walks east in the spring.
Fine. That'll be $4. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, sir. Front or back?
Behind the man in the grey trench coat, please.
There you are.
Thank you. Excuse me, excuse me. Excuse me, excuse me. Excuse me. The stars cast no shadow beneath the street lamp.
Brass bands give my hippo a headache.
I have the list.
Of course you got the list, Ralph. You always got the list.
Call me the Grey Hawk.
Why? Your name's Ralph O'Brien, and the classes you usually get to field operations is sitting in an office translating Cuban agricultural reports.
Here are the orders. Memorize them.
See Jane's having wholemeal sandwiches today and Diet Coke.
She's training for the finals in the social netball against the CIA next week.
I'm worried about George. He's having Russian dressing on his sandwiches.
You suspect a security risk?
No, I'm just worried about him. His strawberry jam sandwiches.
You'll find it all down there. Cheese and tomato, salad, tuna, the lot.
Why don't you just send the lunch orders straight into the sandwich shop?
We try, but they don't have a microfilm reader.
Okay. What's it come up to?
$9.80. It's been sent to your numbered Swiss account.
Oh, God, why do I bother?
We'd better go. There's a tight deadline. They've cut our flexi time.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me.
Did you get that, Ivan?
Duh. No borscht. No vodka. No red cabbage. They're years behind the KGB.
Duh. Ask me to carry our sandwich. Let's watch the news here.
From across the seas, around the globe, out of the outback, and into your local theatre, it's the Cooey Newsreel. Austria, where Australian skiers are showing the Europeans a thing or two on the glittering alpine slopes. Skiing was invented in Australia in the early 1800s, and Australians have been at the forefront of world competition ever since. Champion downhill racer Wayne Tingwall waves to the Cooey cameras. Now he's off. He's really flying down the mountain. Wayne executes a brilliant manoeuvre, a one-legged backflip while shedding a ski and both his poles. Wow, watch that powder snow fly as Wayne skids to a skillful stop on the back of his head. Well done, Wayne. Australia salutes you. Our Cooey newsreel camera visits exotic Japan, where local chefs, under expert Australian supervision, are busy preparing a new dish, barbecued bean curds. First, the bean curds are humanely slaughtered, then cut into elegant strips and marinated in Vegemite before being burnt over a roaring fire. A large crowd watches the demonstration at the Australian Trade Centre in Tokyo. Then flees in happy confusion as the grand old building goes up in flames. Australian cuisine triumphs in the Orient. On a more serious note, Australia's rural economy suffered a nasty blow with the recent heavy toadstorms. At Willa Wallabang along in the heart of the wheat belt, farmers examine meter-deep trips of toads after the worst falls for more than half a century. The Murray River toaded its banks in more than a dozen places, and many motorists were stranded. Seen here from the Cooey Newsreel aircraft, an isolated family huddle on the roof of their farmhouse, surrounded by toads as far as the eye can see. A toad relief fund has been started in Canberra, and donations matched dollar for dollar by the government are already pouring in. But it will be many months before the toads recede and clean-up work can begin. The Cooey Newsreel, across the globe, out of the outback, and into your theatre.
When you've been flying jumbos as long as I have, you know that you don't need gimmicky koalas, poncy actors in fur hats, or fatso Robert Morley to tell you how to get to Paris, Rome, Rio, or Miami. So, wherever you fly, whenever you fly, for a truly satisfying international smoke that costs you less, in fact, bugger all, switch to OP Luxury Filter. Lodge OP smokes from the ground staff at Bangkok. Catch them from cab drivers in California. Scrounge from surfers in Saint-Tropez. And always remember, smoking OP means you're helping someone else give up. And you get to keep the change for the pokey machine. OP Luxury Filter, the international passport to saving money and losing friends.
Men on a dead man's chest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink and the devil have done with the rest. Yo, ho, ho,
and there, you swab!
Haul him along here. We'll give him justice.
Hang him from the yard arm.
Hey, keep all him, I say.
Belay the last pipe, shipmates. He walks the plank according to law.
Flap on all sail!
Up on the plank with him. That's it. Hark him along.
One more step, me lad.
A beautiful flying somersault, 2.5 twists and pike, entering the water in a perfect swallow dive. That's Long John Silver of Great Britain. Now let's see what the judges think. 9.6, 9.6, 9.5, 9.6. Tremendous score, but not quite good enough. And Captain Bly in the longboat is still leading for Australia. Alan Marks for ABC Sport.
And now for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Losis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello there, nice to be with you again. And as usual, I'm speaking to you from my surgery here at the clinic in Drainage Hills. And this week's letter comes from Warren Neck of Oilwater Bay. G'day, Warren. And you write, Dear Bruce, I would like to know the answer to a question my mum and dad will not tell me the answer to, so I'm writing to you. Why do chickens run round the yard after their heads have been chopped off? Yes, Warren, this is an intriguing question, and I'd like to return to it in just a moment. But before I do, I'd like to try and answer the question you haven't asked in your letter but really wanted to. That is, why do people kill chickens in this way at all? Well, it's very simple, Warren. Unfortunately, there are folk among us, like your dad, who have urges and feelings that are barely under control. And sometimes, in order to keep these feelings at bay, they have to give in to them. Well, not all the way, but enough so they don't break out, you know, slaving at the mouth and hunt the streets for innocent victims to cut down hideously with a machete or claw hammer or something like that. So, they have a chicken coop in the back garden, and when they feel the mania surging up within them, Warren, out they go to the chicken coop, grab one of the chooks, and whack, off comes its head. And, of course, the whole family can then celebrate another disaster averted by eating the chicken. Now, why do chickens run round after their heads are cut off? Well, basically, Warren, as I'm sure you know, chickens aren't very intelligent. So for a few minutes after they lost their heads, they don't realise what's happened. And they continue to run around just as before. Then it dawns on them that something is wrong. i.e. that they haven't got a head anymore, and then they fall over and die. Okay, Warren, happy now? This is Bruce Lassus saying goodbye till next time, and please try to remember, ill-treating animals is really a form of cruelty.
Sergeant Cook!
Edward Ned Kelly, you have been found guilty of the crimes of murder, robbery with violence, and attempting to resist legal arrest by officers of the Crown. Have you anything to say before I pass sentence?
Well, sir, it's true that we took the money and shot the troopers that came to get us. And I'm sorry for all the distress we caused so many innocent people. There's one thing I'd like to say, sir.
Yes, man, speak up.
At the time we did it,
Mars was in opposition to Saturn. My star sign is on the cusp of Taurus and Aries. And on the night I was born, toads were found in the cowshed. Doctor, why was this not produced in evidence before? Release that man. Case dismissed.
Kelly couldn't help it any more than you could or I could. Kelly couldn't help it, though he tried to be good. Ah, so good. It was written in his planetary chart. Ned was bugged by the stars from the start. Kelly's constellations were absolutely terrible.
He was ill-starred.
Kelly couldn't help it any more than you could or I could. And at his trial, the jury all knew why.
Was in the sky.
The cops nabbed Kelly at a shootout one night.
Boy, oh boy, how they yelled with delight.
What? Kelly couldn't help it any more than you could or I could.
Here are the forecasts. In the Barossa Valley, aquarium vineyard owners should consult chicken entrails before planting. In the Nullarbor Plain, chance of heavy weather for Sagittarian truck drivers planning to pick up by sea and hitchhikers, and continuing gloomy for Geminis in most of Tasmania, though possibility of a change in matter of the heart by the end of the week.
This is John Cleese. The ABC has received various rather unintelligent and critical phone calls suggesting that this programme is not entirely serious in its intent. Well, I would like to scotch these patently silly insinuations on behalf of Tony Baldwin and Kevin Daly, who spent most of the weekends, including valuable drinking time, putting the bloody thing together.
Too right.
Tony Baldwin and Kevin Daly have been slightly out to lunch with Jill McKay, Genevieve Moy, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Peter Whitford, Drew Forsyth and Peter Smalley. Script by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, David Witt, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Lionel Lane, Steve Johnson and Ken Matthews. Music by Conway's Carnival and Arthur Greenslade and the G-Men. Technical production by Warwick Maver and Len Kernos. Edited by Julianne Ford. Produced by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.